Hi, I'm Susanna Mars, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. Today, we are so fortunate to be at From the Ground Up and their Young Women's Residency Program. All of the members are going to be reading pieces that they wrote for their residency, which will end in June. And by the time you listen to this, you will know that there will be a performance of these pieces in mid-June. So I'll tell you all about that when the time comes. But first, our first member of the Young Women's Residency Program.
Hi, I'm Jessica, and this is my piece. When I was young, I swam too far into the deep end. I remember the deep blue sunlit water, just out of reach, clawing at the quiet stillness, praying I would splash enough for someone to notice me. I was terrified of the water for a long time after that. When I thought of the pool, I no longer thought of laughing with my sister as we played mermaids or closing my eyes shouting, Marco. I thought of watching my bright red hair float wildly in the water, wondering if that brilliant red would be my last memory. And sometimes, when I thought about that incident in that California pool, I thought to myself, if only I had known how to swim.
I'm curious, Jessica, if you would share with us what you're hoping to do with this piece over the term of the residency.
The biggest thing I've been interested in lately is art that feels joyous and yet tells a dark story. And so I want, and I've been told all through my life that I tell very dark stories, so I want to find a way to make my piece feel joyous, because that is really the soul of my art, in my opinion. And I'd like to make that more clear.
Oh, that's fantastic. I can't wait to see it. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kyra Orr, and this is my story called The 25th of July, 2015. It's the 20th of July, 2015, and I'm sitting here in the Ross trying to find a dress for my sister's wedding, while dreading the dress my sister picked out. It was a short white dress with a knitted-like material drenched in champagne-colored sparkles. With so much going on with the dress, what bothered me was the length. It was only to my knees, which meant that people could see my scars from my eczema. I tried on this vomit of sparkles, feeling overly exposed, already playing what the questions/judgments people would say to me. I'm begging my sister to let me wear stockings or something under the dress, because the thought of anyone seeing my scars made me feel vulnerable. And if you know me at all, being vulnerable is like putting ketchup in your mac and cheese. It's awful. As the dress hangs lifelessly in my closet, I start to contemplate even going to the wedding, when Tierra says, "Chill out, no one's even going to be looking at your legs. Relax." Of course, her being the bride and my older sister, I'm too scared to even debate her on that. So I face my fear and decide not to wear stockings. It's the morning of my sister's wedding. My hair and makeup is done. All that's left is the dress. This is my first time showing off my legs ever. I wear my scars like accessories. I feel different. I feel like this dress is for me. Twisting and turning in the mirror, smiling, boosting my own confidence without even knowing it.
Our next artist is Isabel.
Logan gave me the ring. I was 16. We were at his dad's house, the one he used to live in. It was one of the first times we had spent the night together. It was July. He had just gotten back from the country fair. We were naked. We had just had sex, and the sheets were everywhere. I was sitting on top of him, and he was laying on his back, looking up at me. He said, "I got you something." He reached over across his body to the bedside table and picked up a small paper box. I opened it. Inside was the ring. I remember steeling myself, being prepared to pretend to like it, and I remember being surprised because I loved it. We hadn't said I love you yet, and there was a sweet secret pleasure in knowing that I did. It didn't fit on the first finger that I tried it on, and it didn't fit, and it didn't feel quite right on the second. I kept switching it back and forth between the fingers, one too big and one too small. He got so worried that it didn't fit, but it did, and it's fit for 2 years. I thought I lost it once, and I cried all day. For 2 weeks, I kept it in a box. That was how I knew I couldn't really let him go. I couldn't get rid of the ring. It was 2015, the day he gave me the ring. I wasn't friends with his dad yet. I was nervous in his house. It was summer. We weren't working. Even during the school year, we were free and easy. Sophomore year of high school. I was in my third production. Next year, I would be directing my first play. I was a kid, and he was as much of a kid as he ever was, and we were silly in love. Even if we didn't say it out loud, we fawned on each other. We rolled all over each other. The lines between us blurred. We danced, and we read all the time. We still do, but I remember then how ecstatic I felt over finding someone who would read their favorite book aloud to me. He made me giddy. I didn't know anything that was not that moment. We didn't think about politics. We weren't stressed out or angry with each other. It was a young summer, breezy. We sat on the front porch of that old house. Logan and his dad ate fish tacos. His mom and I, with her long dark hair before the chemo, ate two spicy veggie ground sausage. Logan made the salsa, showing off to me, with his dad watching over his shoulder, making adjustments. We laughed while we ate.
I'm just curious, Isabel, that's a beautiful piece. I really enjoyed listening to you. What are you thinking about working on during the residency?
Well, I've been interviewing my mom and my grandmother about the first time they were in love, and I'm going to be doing a solo piece with just me where I play myself and then both of them and telling those stories. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Isadora.
It all started one of those mixed-up mornings where the day may stay cold as can be, rainy and wild, or all at once warm up and have you chin deep in the river. The night before, I'd fallen asleep, curled around my sweetheart with an unnecessary massive mountain of fuzzy farm blankets heaped on top of us. By the time dawn came around, it felt like the sun had slipped in to join us for how warm we were. Half asleep and wobbly, I tried to move the mountain, waking Ramona up in the process. Her sleep-squishy eyes cracked open, and the rest of her face became very still. She looked at me like I was a stranger. Before my next breath, she was out the door and gone. My heart sank. What happened? Things had been finally going well. We were happy and simple and sweet when we'd gone to sleep. What had changed? I drudged myself out of bed, each foot flomping in the direction of the bathroom. My normally loud breathing and heavy footprints felt amplified and unfamiliar. Too much for my sleepy morning ears. After Ramona's escape, I didn't open my eyes till I was in front of the mirror, ready as ever to look my bleak existence in the face and once again ask why. Why must the world make so little sense? However, when my eyes eventually greased themselves open, I was astonished to find not disheveled old me, but a bear. I had overnight turned into a bear, with massive claws, ferocious teeth, and a cuddly bear smile. Looking down past my big furry bear belly, I became aware that I was still wearing my underwear, which looked completely absurd. Laying out a grumpy, gumbly bear giggle, I tore the things off and trotted down the hallway, naked like only a bear can be. Upon entering the kitchen, I found Mike and Oliver, who upon seeing me, became all at once out of the kitchen. "Hmph," I gruffed. "This is going to take some getting used to." I lumbered out of the house and past the chickens, who started up in an incredible panic. Then past the goats, who had an equally alarmed reaction. It wasn't until I made it to the hay barn and the poor mini donkeys were screaming and kicking themselves silly that I found Ramona hidden in a hole in the haystack. "Oh my goodness, please don't eat me, or the animals. You've already eaten Isadora, isn't that enough?" "No, Ramon, see? It's me, I'm a bear now." "Oh," said Ramona, standing up and out of the hole. "Thank goodness, I thought you got all gobbled up." She calmed down all the animals and we walked back to the house. I gave her a ride on my back because that seemed like the most fun. On our way, we found Mike and Oliver tucked behind the compost pile and explained to them how I was a bear now. I also gave them a ride. It seemed the least I could do after scaring them all so bad. Back in the kitchen, Ramona made perfect pink and yellow custard, and we talked about my new exciting life now that I was not human. First, eat a very happy custard breakfast with my friends, and then maybe take a nice cuddly nap, because after all, it had been quite the morning. Step two, go into town and eat all the evil people. As a bear, I knew I had keen, evil-detecting instincts and a bottomless belly, so I'd make quick work of the wicked in the world. Once I'd chomped out and eaten up all the no-good hearts out of all the no-good people, step three would be setting free all the unhappy caged animals everywhere and giving all the children a few days off from school, so we could have, all together, a great big bonfire, sing-along, under-star-seeing sleepover. And that is exactly what we did. The end.
So what are you planning on doing during the residency with this piece?
I'm not entirely sure. I want to have puppets, maybe, and some clouds, and a whole lot of silly things, possibly stilts and music.
Great.
Yeah.
That kind of a circus feel.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing
it. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Siobhan.
I don't know if I feel love the way other people do. It certainly doesn't sound like it from what I've heard about love from others. I don't see someone or meet someone and think, hey, I want to kiss this person and be with them alone for long periods of time. I don't daydream about perfect dates with that specific someone or anything that you can't do as a friend. Sure, the concept is appealing, but the moment I consider a real person, it stops being interesting. That doesn't mean I don't love, though. I love differently. I love them. Now, this is a cheesy story. It started in a simple chat room. I could talk to them all night. They lived in New York. When they went to bed at night, I was excited to speak to them for the rest of the day. I could hardly wait. Time didn't exactly fix this. They would leave me grinning like an idiot in a lightless room over how happy they made me. My curtains were open and I would stare at the stars and clouds thinking about how incredible they were long after they were asleep and I should have been. Christmas, the news came. They would be coming to the West Coast and we would meet at a Seattle convention. For months, I was excited to meet them. Frozen had just come out and they rarely, if ever, went to Starbucks. So with a couple of friends, I wrote a parody of Do You Want to Build a Snowman as a joke, making it Do You Want to Go to Starbucks? March comes, they come, they're in the building. I bounce up and down in the elevator hoping it goes faster, the doors open and they're there. They're there and they're real and I'm hugging them and I never want that hug to end. I wish it never had sometimes. The weekend went by too quickly, but they liked the song. They came to Portland a couple times over the next couple years, and while we crammed so many memories in that time, the time always went by too fast. They could stay for a million years, and it would still be too fast. I have two favorite memories. One is when we met. The other is during one of these trips. I couldn't sleep. They were leaving the next day. I stayed up all night, and when they woke up, while we waited for my dad to get ready to take us to the airport, I lay behind them as they played a game on their phone, my arm draped over theirs, their warmth being enough to keep me warm as I dozed, and they would occasionally nudge me awake so I could be ready to go in a moment's notice. I felt the most content I did in my whole life. Christmas again, 2015. I go and visit them in New York. I have horrible allergy attacks and I miss my family, but at least I'm with them. The place is new and it's scary, but at least I'm with them. I don't know if I love the way other people do, but I do know that I love them in a way where I don't need to kiss them or do anything more than what friends do. I'm just glad every day that they're alive, and sometimes that's all I need.
Thank you so much for sharing that. What are you planning on doing during the residency with it?
I don't know if I'm going to be doing a lot with it, but I would maybe like to explore something like you've got this sort of separation anxiety. Because I'm planning on doing a lot about anxiety, but also the kind of people that calm down anxiety. And the person I'm talking about is definitely one of those people. So I think I'll definitely bring them up.
Interesting. So you want to write a new piece entirely, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, totally. I I was maybe thinking of doing like a stand-up comedy.
Great.
Sort of thing.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
This is Sydney.
I am enough. I've been struggling with this idea for quite some time. In most situations, I am able to convince myself that it is true. I fell in love with the boy from the summer camp. This was the very first time I had taken the heart from my breast and trusted it to another's hands. Our bodies never touched, but our hearts sat next to each other in the open. For a time, we shared each thought, worry, and fear. One day, I fell into a deep hole. He stood at the opening, holding our hearts in his hands. I reached out my hands and asked with my eyes for his help. He replaced his heart in his chest and crushed mine before dropping it into my outstretched hands and walking away. Many years have passed, and yet my crushed heart weighs heavy in my chest every time I enter a new relationship. I will always be enough for myself, but if I fall down that hole again, I don't believe that I will be enough for someone else. If I split my needs between my relationships, then no one will ever be weighed down with my crushed heart in their hands.
What are you hoping to work on in this piece during the residency?
I hope to kind of explore this idea and build more confidence in myself.
The idea of being enough?
Yeah, enough for myself. And if someone else doesn't think that I am enough, then they shouldn't be in my life.
Great. Thanks so much for sharing your piece.
Thank you.
This is Chloe.
So my piece is going to be about my childhood, and more specifically being raised by a single mother. I grew up without a father figure, and the ideal that dependence upon another person would somehow like destroy me made me kind of block people out. So the only people I ever depended upon were my mother and my grandmother, and I had a hard time keeping relationships, friends, and I didn't really have interest in romantic relationships with anyone. In my early teens, my mom tried to explain to me that depending on someone didn't mean I was weak and didn't mean that I had to give up my freedom. And she also explained that in a healthy relationship, two people depended upon each other and were still at the same time independent. And I had like a really difficult time believing that. And it wasn't until I started writing that some of the buried emotions about like an absent father came up. And it was actually the last year of my high school, my senior year of high school, when all my friends were dating and in relationships, that I realized like all my life I had shut out all possibilities of potential romance. And I had built a wall around myself in an effort to protect myself from being wounded by someone who was supposed to love me. And I traced like this cycle of like blocking people out and like not having relationships or not having good relationships. I traced it back to my great grandmother, actually, who was the single mother of my grandmother, and then my grandmother, who was the single mother of my mother, and my mother, who was the single mother of me. There were all these absent fathers and these broken relationships, like divorces or just like breaking up. And I realized that if I stayed in the same place of bondage, that the cycle would continue with me. So my piece is going to be about that.
That's wonderful. It sounds like you've got a lot to write about.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing.
Thank you.
What an amazing group of women, all willing to experiment out loud. Don't miss the Young Women's Residency performances that will be happening at Zoomtopia, 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th. You can go get tickets online at the link I have here on the website or email Katherine at Katherine with a K, katherineftgu@gmail.com to reserve a spot. And now I'm going to add my initial interview with Katherine, talking about what From the Ground Up is all about and how it began. Thanks again for listening to Adventures in Artslandia. Hi, welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. This is a little added value for this week in that I was sent a really interesting website about a group called From the Ground Up, which is an accessible youth arts program, and they're offering a young women's residency program. And right now, I'm looking for a lot of things to make me feel hopeful about the great things we can do through art with young people, and this seems like one of them. So I'm going to give a call over to Katherine Murphy Lewis, who is their executive director, and talk a little bit about their organization. This program is going to give participants an opportunity to train with women artists from around the state in 10 different mediums in the world of performing arts. Classes are going to include improv, movement for the performer, modern dance, clowning, songwriting, and design, just to mention a few. So they're going to take each resident who doesn't have to have any experience in performance. They're going to connect them with a mentor, and then they're going to have a period of time where they're going to do some studying, and then they're going to create and perform a solo piece in a public performance at the end of the program. It's an incredible opportunity, and it is supported by the Regional Arts and Culture Council and Ronnie LaCroute. You can find out more at their website, which is fromthegrounduppdx.wixsite.com. That's fromthegrounduppdx.wixsite.com. Well, hi, everybody. I have got Katherine Murphy Lewis on the phone, who is the executive director of From the Ground Up. And Katherine, how did From the Ground Up come into your mind, and how has it evolved?
Yeah, so I had just moved back to Portland from the East Coast after some travel after college, and I worked for a summer camp program as the lead playwriting teacher. And we had 12 incoming high school freshmen that were part of that program. And it was a month-long summer program, and we had this very intense, wonderful month together where we sort of created a company of people. And me and a couple other women who worked on that program, Anna Crandall and Chantal DeGroote, the three of us sort of started brainstorming about how we could keep this group of kids together and continue to offer services for them, because after that month, the program just sort of ended. And so what manifested from there was from the ground up. And so we were like, well, if we're going to offer services to these kids, why don't we start a whole company?
And how long have you been in existence?
This is our fourth, we're going into our, we just had our fourth birthday.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we launched sort of this time of year, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And so our first year we did a pilot program where 12 high school freshmen, those 12 kids, plus what was 11 of the kids that have been in the summer program and one new member who was a friend of one of the students, that created 12 of them, we worked together for the course of the year, and we created an original mythology about where art came from. And that was this really magical experience. We got a small RAC grant that helped that program as well, and we and some support from the wonderful Ronnie LeCrew, and we were housed at Malagra Theater, and we did this great program, and that was our first sort of year. And then we did a small summer program that followed that up, and then from there we've grown every year. We've doubled, if not more, our student base every year, which has been really exciting. So we went from serving 25 kids in our first year to 50 in our second to closer to 100 in our third.
Oh.
And then in this last year, we've actually reached these in-school residencies, weekend workshops, and intensives, like working with English departments. And we did a poetry out loud, like performance training seminar. So one of the schools was doing poetry out loud, and I came in and did lectures throughout the day and went into classrooms and helped students with the performance part of poetry. And so we, this year, that was an example of one thing, and then we also have longer residencies where we write original material with students, and they perform it, and that can be in either spoken word or performance pieces. We have a performance troupe that writes an original show every year and performs every spring. Those 12 kids that founded the program with us just graduated this last June, and all 12 of them were in the final showcase. And we did a show called Senioritis the Musical. It was a parody on their senior year of high school.
Oh, how fantastic.
It was really wonderful. And so in this last year, we've been able to reach 758 students in our programming, which has been incredible. And since then, Anna Crandall has gone on to do very many exciting things, and so has Chantal DeGroote. I'm sure many people who are listening are familiar with her wonderful acting career here in Portland. And so I kind of hunkered down and stayed with From the Ground Up, and it's pretty much a one-man band. I mean, I do the administering and the fundraising and the curriculum development and the majority of the teaching. And we're very lucky going into this year through support from the Regional Arts and Culture Council, as well as Ronnie LeCrew and other small community members, individual donors, well, individual donors, to be able to start to have a little bit of a staff. So I have an intern executive assistant now, and I'm hiring a bunch of guest artists for a bunch of new programming that we're launching this year.
That is incredible. I mean, to reach over 700 young people is just kind of blows my mind. I'm a little speechless.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a little speechless. When I sat down, I was going into a round of funding meetings and talking to people about what we were doing this year. And so I sat down and kind of quantified some numbers. And I was like, oh my, we've reached a lot of students this year. I had not quite realized it was that much in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of work I think that is just inspires hope for the future, and that is much needed, at least for me personally.
I feel you. Since the turning of events in the world has been very, takes a lot to sort of suit up and walk into the world each day and kind of keep your eyes forward and focused on the hopeful stuff. It's a lot of extra work right now with everything going on.
Right. And I was especially taken with the residency program that's coming up, and I wanted to get this up on the podcast as soon as possible, just so that young people who are interested in maybe exploring their artistic side. I thought it was especially fantastic that you don't need to have any prior experience.
Yeah, so we're launching a young women's residency program, which is, we got a wonderful grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Mm-hmm. Always a tongue twister for me. Mm-hmm. And supporting this particular program. And so what we're doing is we're selecting 8 young women out of the community through a very short and simple application process and then an open workshop and info session that will participate in a residency that will take place over the year. Well, they will work with 10 professional female artists from around the state. So we have, for example, Terry McMahon, who's a wonderfully talented actress coming all the way up from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland to do some teaching with us. Sil Stengel, who's a well-known improv artist from that region as well as a lot of local professional artists will be teaching with us. And the residents will get to take those 10 workshops. And in those 10 workshops, they will also be developing original material. And from there, within my mentorship, and my assistant directors, they will create solo shows that will be performed in early June at the end of the residency. And yes, no experience required at all. We're more looking for sort of people who are dynamic and storytellers and are interested in the arts and would like to explore them more deeply. And we're very interested in making sure we curate a diverse group of young women that represents the diverse Portland that I think can sometimes be looked over in programming because of access. And so residents will get to participate entirely for free in this program. And we are making sure to reach out to other nonprofits working with minorities or the LGBTQ community to make sure that we create a group that represents a lot of different stories, a lot of different backgrounds.
So I see first, if people are interested in applying, they need to go to an online application and fill out a series of questions. And then the first 25 applicants will be invited to the open workshop and info session. And then 8 of the 25 will be selected to participate. So there's a clickable link on the website. And I already put the website at the beginning of the podcast before we were talking.
And, oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so young people, you know, dive into this. It's such a wonderful way to connect, and I think couldn't more encourage young people to get involved in the arts in some way.
Well, and I think we're in a place where storytelling, I mean, we sort of always are, right? Where storytelling is so important. And so much of the research out there in psychology and also in sociology points to that we develop deeper empathy when we hear and tell our stories, and in a way that the community is able to hear them and engage in them. And so a lot of our work at From the Ground Up is helping young people develop and find platforms to share their stories and their worldviews. And I think now more than ever, now we really need that. We really need that in our world. And I think particularly young women, it's really powerful to get to see young women. I mean, women are still marginalized in the art, particularly in theater, as we know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important that we work towards equity and justice in that area to ensure that, because the diversity of stories is sort of the point, right? That we're hearing from we're hearing from people of color, we're hearing from people of different sexual orientations, we're hearing from people who maybe moved here from another country and don't speak English and have a different worldview than us. if we're hearing all the same stories all the time, we sort of get these two-dimensional views of the world, I think. So that's underneath all of this residency and this organization, that's what we're working towards, and that's sort of the hope behind all of that.
Right. I mean, and in my experience, no matter what you do, ultimately, I mean, these young people will have a whole life ahead of them to figure out what they're going to do with their lives, whether it's arts related or not. But this type of education is just so nurturing and beneficial for anybody in any profession. Collaboration, listening, storytelling, sharing these kinds of stories is just going to nurture you your whole life long.
Absolutely. And we're finding out in education that really to develop the hard skills, like reading, writing, math, you know, the things that our formal education focuses on that are very important indeed, you know, are the ways to communicate and navigate the world. But to really learn those skills, you have to develop the soft skills first, mm-hmm. which is like perseverance, grit, the willing to take healthy risks.
Discipline.
The willingness to fail. Mm-hmm. Discipline, exactly. Seeing a project through. Mm-hmm. And the art is really good at teaching those soft skills.
Yep.
And so I think as we go into another period of, you know, where we're, I think we're going to see funding sort of trickle away, and we're seeing it being pulled out of public schools more and more, we need to really sort of raise the consciousness on the arts isn't about creating artists necessarily. Mm-hmm. Arts is about developing exactly that, what you just said, mm-hmm. both those skills. And that's why we need it in our schools and in our communities.
Yeah,
outside of the storytelling and empathy aspect, which is a whole other element, but as far as education goes, it's so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, and that's why, we're not calling it an audition, because it isn't an audition. And the application is like really just getting names and a few questions to get a sense of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of times you get shied away. You think you're not experienced enough, or you're not quote unquote talented enough. And that's not what this, particularly this residency, is about, or so. So, that's sort of what I hope that the young women who get to participate will take away all those things with them. That's the goal.
Yeah. I find that this kind of work is the thing. It's infectious. The minute you are in a room with people and you're willing to listen and develop and have a process, you want to continue in that vein. And that's one of the pieces of the puzzle right now, I think, in our culture, with electronics taking such a big part of our lives or taking up a lot of space, that it the only way to combat it is with that FaceTime and that you know, face-to-face contact and process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, especially community work right now, it's kind of in our name. It's sort of from the ground up. I believe that change really happens. It starts in a small community. It starts with individuals, and it ripples outward.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to see any kind of large-scale change without that element there, without sort of starting with our communities and our young people and creating spaces that change is possible in.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas are possible in, and then going from there, you know. And as we look back sort of on social justice and the history of political and social movements, you'll see oftentimes that the birthplace of them
is a
community effort, and then from there there's a huge ripple effect,
right,
of that work.
We have an event at Artist Repertory Theater called Late Night Piano Bar, and it might be something that your community of students might like to attend, especially since they wrote a musical. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's actually going to happen this Saturday night, weather permitting, I hate to say, but got to say it now.
Right.
But it's a really fun place where a lot of young people have been congregating and singing and spending time together, and it might be a nice crossover.
Absolutely. I think our students, I don't know about this Saturday as well because with the weather and everything, but definitely is it every month?
It's once a month at Artist Repertory Theater. It's especially with young people. I think it's so great to provide them opportunities to be together and do, you know, kind of, I think, courageous things, sharing music and just enjoying time together, like we said, face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think those kinds of things, that sounds wonderful. I will definitely come.
Sounds good.
I think that those things that, you know, and those were so much more have been so much more common, and as you were saying, like the technology and sort of the way the world's developing, and there's so many benefits, right, from technology and all of that as well, but we also lose something. I mean, everything in life, for me, my experience of the world is that everything in life is a trade-off, and I think technology falls wonderfully into that view of that we get all of these great things, but then we also sort of lose some really important stuff as well.
Right.
And how we sort of nurture both, right, how we gain from the developments in technology without losing the face time and the community. I don't know. I think that's always going to be sort of our quandary going into this modern world that we live in.
Right. It takes a real attention. You know, it's easy to get sucked in because it's a lots of fun, the technology, and I don't deny it. I love it myself. That said, it just takes some real dedication to, you know, freeing your body and mind from the constraints of it, you know, and being cognizant of what you're doing and taking responsibility for it. It's interesting. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was actually speaking with a friend of mine last night as the snow of Portland came to cancel Portland today. And we were talking about how, so my generation, this sort of period of time where you were born between like the mid-70s to the mid-80s, we're in this really interesting time period because we didn't really have technology growing up. But right as we were coming of age, like right as we were leaving high school and headed into college, the internet sort of really became popular. Mm-hmm. And then cell phones came on the scene right in our early 20s. And so every like generation before us had technology. They didn't get technology until they were in their 30s, really.
Mm-hmm.
And every generation after us had it from as long as they can remember.
Right.
And so we were sort of in this generation where it flipped, and so we have a very special relationship to it.
You're in the chasm.
So we're very aware of it, and we know how to use it and engage it, I think, unlike, or not that other generations don't know how to use it and engage it now,
mm-hmm.
we didn't acclimate to it as much. We didn't have to acclimate to it as much.
Yeah.
But we still are a little, I mean, for me, I'm like still a little hesitant, almost, maybe the word, skeptical of it a little bit. But I'm the same way. I mean, it's so nice. I can get work done waiting for a meeting to start on my phone or, you know, all
right.
The that come with it. But it doesn't, I'm someone who's very into calling and talking to my friends who I don't live in the same city of.
Right.
Let's not just text, let's share a phone conversation.
Right.
How you're doing.
Yeah, really, really hear the voice. And yeah, I agree. I hit a wall recently. I have all sorts of jobs and, you know, I'm scheduling a lot of things and I hit the wall with the email and I thought, forget it. I can't do any more email scheduling. It's going to drive me bats because, you know, it just gets into this set feeling. It almost feels like early computer days of not dots and dashes, but that very mechanical way of being in the world, kind of old fashioned computer. Tick, 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 tick. You know, it doesn't feel like it. There's no breath, I guess, is that's what it is. Not breath in it. And that just gets to me after a while.
Yeah, I think we're finding out more and more with research how really interacting with screens as much as we are and interacting with as much data as we're interacting with every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we ingest far more. I know we ingest far more data than we ever have every day.
Yeah.
Just between ads and Facebook blurbs and this and that, and on our phone and on the radio, and we're constantly absorbing data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to keep finding out how that affects the human psyche as well as just the functionality of the brain.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Absolutely, I'm very far from being a scientist, but I find that I wonder about that sometimes.
And I think as artists that we have an intuition about how the body and mind function in the world that's just as integral to the understanding of the human experience as science.
Well, I think that we have the wonderful luxury as artists. I think it was Gabby Hoffman the actress Gabby Hoffman that said this, but we have this wonderful luxury that our work is to dive deeper into our own humanity, thus exploring others' humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we get to develop those softer skills and those intuitive skills more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're just a muscle like anything else.
Right.
I mean, it's that chicken or egg. Are you intuitive that you're drawn to the arts, or do you develop them in the arts? Who knows exactly where that line falls? But I do think that that muscle gets exercised more in our work life.
Yes.
I think that in all areas, and even business, I mean, working, you know, you're starting to see, right, like big companies like Google pay to have improv workshops come in and work with them on creation and innovation and teamwork to help companies run better. So I think the more we incorporate those skills in every element of life,
mm-hmm.
the sort of more, the better the world will be. But yeah, we do. We get that as artists. We get to really think. We're forced to or asked to think deeply about humanity, about the human condition.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me about the Young Women's Residency Program through From the Ground Up. I will put the website on the podcast. It will be up on Monday. And tell Ronnie LaCrude hi for me. She is an amazing supporter of the arts, and golly, we're so grateful to have her in our community.
I know, she really is. I think everyone calls her the patron saint of arts around here. Patron saint of theater and art in Portland. She is lovely. I'll pass on the hello, and thank you very much for giving me a call and having me on the podcast.
Oh, you're
really
so welcome.
Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I also want to give a shout out to the Regional Arts and Culture Council, because they are doing great things, and I feel more and more appreciative of where they're putting their funds as I see what's happening with them. It's very exciting and wonderful.
Yeah. I'm really grateful to them as well. So a huge thank you to both of Ronnie and them from me as well.
All right. Well, I hope we'll meet at some point in time, and all best to you and the residency program, and have a wonderful rest of your snow day.
I will. Thank you so much. You as well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Catherine.